我哋平时饮嘅水都充满咗重金属、杂质、氯气同埋细菌。我会用健波能量活水器，除咗可以清除以上嘅杂质之外，仲可以活化水中嘅信息。健波能量活水器，生命之源，健康之泉。六创意健康店电话2882-4848，网址www.healthshop.com.hk。
以下节目内容纯属主持及嘉宾个人意见，与本台立场无关。
There are so many things I would like to mention about each one of you, but I'm particularly interested in this paper. There's one thing which, there are two things I'd like to ask you. One, what exactly the use of placing what we're doing somewhere here?
What's the use?
What's the use?
Yes.
I would like you to say more about this. And secondly, I can think of various branches which cannot be located on spots because we are involved in all three. Like the three things I got involved in, like, for example, raw food, living food. It was physical, obviously, and to us it's quite spiritual. And also hands-on healing. You know, on a physical level, you know, you have teeth and it's gone. So it's very physical. And actually, it is spiritual in so many ways, when we are downloading energy from the universe. So, where can I place these things? Yeah.
Okay, first question is, what's the use? I think the use is to know yourself and to know the others. So, knowing yourself, where are you on that plane there, in that whole terrain? Actually, your example is a very good one because it leads us to many questions, in fact, right? So we don't necessarily know where we are ourselves on that plane. I think I would like to say that, let me say a little bit more about this word frequency, right, which means also maturity. Because the physical level is the hard things, the things we can touch, the things we can put a ring around. And so babies can do that, right? Babies, they start to learn the physical world. They don't know anything about the mental. And then as they grow, then they learn these things. So some people would say, actually, the spiritual is here all along, in a way. Of course, it is, but it's not the primary mode of operating. So if you go to, let's say you go to a teaching about numerology, you could be doing it strictly on a physical level, right? Just what are the numbers? It's like a fortune telling, you read it and then you get a certain answer. But I can hear from your description of that, your intention was something very different, maybe more mental, emotional, to help people understand themselves. So you're approaching people on the physical, but actually your intention is over here. And sometimes it could be the same even with spiritual, right? So, why I like this the openness of this model is I think it can help us to be open-minded about ourselves and where we are, and also to be extending ourselves down. Right? Because the higher level, higher frequencies are more powerful. We have more leverage with the higher frequencies than we do with the lower frequencies. With the higher frequency, we can reach a much, much bigger change. We can have much more influence than we can on a physical level. So even though our training is here, then we would want to grow as we continue as practitioners to become to reach the higher and higher frequencies for our effectiveness and our reach. So that's another thing about this model. And then in terms of conventional and radical, also it's all in the eyes of the beholder, right? Like I said, I didn't think I was really very radical, but many other people thought I was. So it's a move. And then in a different environment, it could be very conventional. You know, something from Ikaria, what they do normally is just totally conventional and ordinary, whereas here in Hong Kong, it may be very radical. So I think this kind of openness is helpful in terms of understanding ourselves and also how we will change through time and in different environments, and then also understanding other people and how they are also, you know, somewhere in this, in many parts or some parts of this plane.
It seems it doesn't only apply to practitioners.
Not only practitioners, but we can also use this model to kind of appraise and assess and whatever, you know, a group, a city, or even a school, you know, kind of, you know, the equilibrium, the status.
Or other professions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that idea. Lawyers, where do they fit?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I would look at it another way. You can think of it in that way. The more physical you get, there's more money there. Because once you get the spiritual, now you're competing with the Buddhist church, the Catholic church, and all the... Because they're giving spiritual advice for free, basically. So you can hardly make money there.
Well, I want to point out something about religion versus spiritual. Because religion can also be very physical, right? When it's about rules and rituals, this is a physical level. And so they use maybe spiritual insight, but it's applied in a physical way.
Once you test spiritual, it's free, basically.
What about those mega churches?
Sorry?
What about those mega churches? You know, those huge churches, they are very rich.
Yeah.
Right, unless you want to offer a church.
But they're 10%. Yeah. It's not free, it's 10%. I mean, anybody who's been involved in a religion knows that the bottom line is 10%.
But you don't feel it. It's not
of everything you earn, it's 10%. Yes, I think that's a really good point, because we are trained in religion or religious organizations to never even think about the 10%, so we don't miss it. But it's not free.
Otherwise, you go to the church, okay, give me 10% first, and I'll let you in. I'm not going to pay.
Can I add something? I didn't go on the business side, because as I said, I'm not the most business person, but I had to learn the hard way, really hard. Now, the difference between when I started and now, we didn't have iPhones, we didn't have WhatsApp, we didn't have all the things that we have nowadays, which makes it very different. And my younger animal communicators that are coming up have completely changed. They've taught me, oh, Facebook's old-fashioned, you need Instagram. Oh, okay. Oh, what about Snap something? Oh, oh. So with the change of technology, it's made spirituality change, and it's made any area, the church, anywhere, change. So we've got the added bonus of technology, and that has changed the whole market.
There's a dog barking.
Sorry, do apologize. It is supposed to be off. But technology and I don't go very well together.
Yes.
Okay, my second question. Thank you for reminding us about the Chinese market. Yes, we are all trying to go there. But my question is, how do you find the Chinese audience? How different are they from those in Taiwan and Hong Kong?
Taiwan is also different from Hong Kong.
Yes. What do we have to know about the Chinese audience in particular?
I would say, in general, we got three types of people. simplified, okay? You got some people that are really nice and open, and they need it, and they thank you. But these are people that are experienced, or they're read, or they know something already. Those are the kind you want. Then you got some that just want to learn what you're going to do because they want to make a business and open a seminar next week. Everything you said in the class will be like all over China. and they have many more connections than you, they're going to eat you up. Yeah. Then there's a third kind, which they don't believe anything, and they're quite rude. So it's, I think if you go to China, you need the right connections, the right people together. And so we talk about cooperative effort, maybe something like that. In fact, I talked to Santa before about doing some sort of network or society or something like that, so we can help each other and protecting each other.
Well, we are talking about earning RMB, the Chinese dollar. Perhaps I can share one experience here about the Chinese market. Well, just to compare notes, I think to start with, it's good to distinguish between two ways of earning their money. There's one group which is extremely rich. They don't mind paying a hell lot, a fortune, to come to your class. And there's a second group which, well, I would put it online. You can reach a million of them. If each of them pays you $50, you're super rich. And I think to start with, for the benefit of people like me and many of us in the room who's trying to enter the Chinese market, this is a good start. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but those things that you're talking about require you to be more famous. So in that case, if you could be more radical, it's better. Something totally new, unique.
And you catch the imagination.
You know, when you put it on those $50 per shot deal, you can make much more money. Mm-hmm. So I think you need to rebrand yourself a bit.
Exactly.
And find good people to market as well.
Yes, well, let me join in, please.
Thanks for sharing your ideas. So I just would like to know, how did you encounter the fear, especially during the very beginning of your business, especially just like I mentioned about the financial situation and something like that? Thanks.
Encounter the fear?
Yeah.
As you say,
don't give up your day job. It's not one shot, you know, unless you're rich and then you don't care. But we all have, I was a toxic chiropractor, I was doing that, and at the same time writing books and giving speeches and doing, trying, like really, really busy until now. But because I love it, I'm not tired. So.
Yeah.
And then depending on, you know, your luck as well, who you're going to meet. But I think the important is to make yourself an expert in your field. So that if you're just starting out, write a book, you know, get yourself established somehow so people recognize you. You know, you don't have to start from the beginning, but at least write a book first. Do something.
What kind of fear are you talking about?
For example, I think most of the people may not do BMS practitioner before. So they have their own business before, so they have a great change or some calling from the universe and then change the field. So many things are just uncertain somehow, so this is my question.
And that's what I said, you know, when I was 5 years old, sorry, we just immigrated to Canada, okay? I haven't told many people this story, but I think you guys can handle it. Because more people can't handle it. So we had a Bible study with my dad, and suddenly there's a what I call an angel standing beside my father. He's about, well, he's going to be like 7 feet tall, and I got some characteristics and the whole thing. And the guy, and it's like this bright light, and I forget to speak English now.
Goosebumps.
And then I couldn't talk, and I'm like, and then he's looking at me and smiling. He goes, you know, you're here for a certain purpose in your life and you're going to do something. I'm like, I can't breathe. So he goes, okay, okay, and it disappears. And then later on, my dad told me about, he had some experiences and he did this with an angel and it's the same one. So, yeah, I had, from a young age, I know I'm supposed to do something
spiritual or something to help me deep. I don't know what he didn't tell me, but still, it's not going to happen in one day. That's why I said, don't give up your day job. You need a way to make money first.
So
I took this great seminar in California, and this seminar is an intuition training. Actually, I didn't attend it. I took the, what do you call it, the promotion class. The seminar is 4 weekends. Each weekend, $7,000. Okay? It's like really expensive. That was 1989 or something. So this one lady put her hand and said, excuse me, teacher, I don't have $7,000. How, what should I do? She says, okay, if you don't have $7,000, you don't need the seminar. You need to learn how to make $7,000. In other words, you know, don't give yourself too much pressure, but this is your passion, this is what you love. So every moment you have, you have to put, rearrange, learn more, and change yourself, rebrand, look at the market. If you're interested in China, if you got Mandarin, definitely searching what's happening in China, because that's like changing so fast now too. New seminars, like constantly, new stuff constantly coming up. So.
I want to add a couple of things. One is about fear of doing the work. I don't remember, I was thinking, wow, was I ever afraid to do the work? I don't think so. I actually wasn't. I think it was, but I think part of the reason is because we just keep getting more training and also more practice. So if you're practicing at the right level, it means you're going to feel excited, right? You're not going to feel bored and, oh, this is too easy. You're going to feel excited, but not scared. At least I didn't. I mean, of course, there's been times I've been scared, like speaking in front of a big audience or something like that. But not every day. So you do it sometimes, and you keep going. The other point is about financial fear. I have that a lot. I'm someone who I'm not comfortable if I don't have an income. I used to have a cycle where I would get depressed whenever my cash flow goes down. And so it's actually really unhealthy because then you get less good at making money. And you know, as a coach, if I could always tell if I really needed the money, it was so much more difficult to sell coaching because everyone can tell. I mean, you don't say anything, but they just sense the insecurity, the neediness. Neediness especially. This is why don't quit your day job is such a good, it's such a really good piece of advice because you need to keep your own foundation really strong. This kind of fear is not helpful and it will block you. Yeah, so you've got to keep your foundation strong.
Can I just something? I tell everybody not to give up their day job. quite simply, because your day job, they become your clients too. You give up your day job, you've got no networking. And unless you're very good at networking and selling yourself, then your day job also helps you network. I had to change my name to start doing my work. Because I was Mrs. Barrows, I was associated with Dr. Barrows, the vet, and when I started, I was really a crazy lady. So I changed to a much better name, to Rosina Maria Acquati, much nicer, much more sexy, and I would go out and be totally separate from my husband because I couldn't tarnish his career in those days because it was a no-no situation. But don't give up your day job. I tell my students not to do that because they become your clients and that's another way of networking. Unless you're very good at PR and very good at networking, never give up your day job. You will always need the money somewhere along the line and when you're ready to leave, you'll know when it's the right time.
Please.
I think for my own learning it's about working with people, forming your own team. And if Dr. Chawashan would like to share, the story of Dreams Possible is a very good example. It started with one man's own dream, and then that was about 12 years ago. And then, you know, he strongly believed in what he was going to do. However, what made this institution really took off was when a team of volunteers slowly but surely came into reality. So I guess first, of course, you won't give up on your day job, or you won't, you know, just focus on your dream. But on the other hand, I think what really makes a difference is you don't rely on your own effort. And when you try to form a team, you realize, well, I realize anyway, and I have to learn to be truly humble. Because working with people of different background and personality, especially when it comes with, you know, business interest, there will be conflicts, there will be confrontations, there would be setbacks. And you have to truly reflect on yourself and ask yourself, what is your real purpose, objective in doing all this? So when we are truly honest of what we want to do, we are bound to attract the right people to work with us in the team. And with team effort, the success rate is much bigger. And I think the story of Dream Impossible is a very good, revealing one.
I think it's the same. I give one advice is like if you do multi-level business, you know multi-level, right? Yeah. They tell you it's so easy, you can just get your friends and sign up. But my parents were top multi-level people in Canada. That's how I got money to become a doctor. And I've been noticing how people do multi-level business, and it's basically is what you said. It's about your job. It's your friend, it's your connections, it's who you're going to sell to. So if you observe people that have the most friends and connections, do the best in multi-level business, right? So like, if you're a therapist already and you have every day you see 100 people, you can sell a lot of vitamins and a lot of products. But if you don't have any friends alone in some room worrying about what you're going to do, you're not going to sell anything. So by this time you're selling yourself, you're not selling that product. So I think definitely you need as many ways to get social. My little triangle thing, there's one thing about social networking, interchange, whatever you would expect somewhere there. But yeah, that's the key point. And in fact, being social also helps you live longer. So.
Angela, just now, if I understand you correctly, you were talking about two kinds of fear. One is the professionally, your fear that your ideas won't be accepted. You have no confidence in what you are trying to offer. And the second one is financial. Now let's talk about the financial fear. I think for many of us, this is the really difficult part. Because as they say, you don't get what you want, you get what you feel. Now if you open a shop or whatever, you are burning money and you are not getting clients, but it's just natural to be anxious. And it's exactly that kind of anxiety that prevents you from being successful financially. So how can one break the vicious circle?
Yeah, you trust. So this is, how do I answer that question?
You did already. Your first word.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, that's it.
That's the answer.
It's such a big word, yeah. But it's everyone has to have their find their own path to it, I think, is the thing.
Yeah.
It's trust. Yeah, trust. So, I mean, there's a very practical side of it, right? Is the business that you're doing really the right one? You know, I'll tell you one of the, this relates to something you said earlier, but one of the things I learned partway through developing my business, I picked up this book, which was called How to Be Successful as an Executive Coach or something like this. And at that point, the industry was just maturing in the U.S., really just starting to become a more solid business. And so there were some people starting to write now about how do we do this. So I was hungry for this kind of knowledge, you know. How do I be successful as an executive coach? And the primary piece of advice that I got from that book was that you must make sure that your clients have the ability to pay. So that's pretty practical, isn't it? And yet, so many of us are more like Red. Like, we want to give back to the underprivileged, the unfortunate. You know, our hearts want to do that work, but if we want to be practical and actually get rid of our fear, you know, to find a way to create a platform for ourselves so that we can do more, then sometimes we have to take that choice. Mm-hmm. That was a very hard choice for me, actually. I thought, oh, how sad, you know? But it's the reality. It still makes me sad, in fact. And I think that's why we also need to collaborate more, because once you have a foundation, then you have a chance to, you know, spread some of that around and use your time and your resources very wisely. Yeah. But, so back to the main point is trust. How are you going to trust yourself in business to make the right decisions, to trust that the money is going to come? So like I said, on the practical side and then on the spiritual side, right? That there's a calling. There's an angel that's got your back. You're going to go forward. You're going to do the trip a few times, right? But you're trusting and you're moving forward.
Yeah, also I want to mention there's another problem dealing with this whole field, which is traditionally, if you want to be like a carpenter, you do an apprenticeship. You work with somebody for like 6 years until you're really good, and then you become, you know, like as a doctor, okay, we finish so many years of university, then we have internship. You go to the hospital and you work with patients and you get screened out until you get good. But as a body, Where's your mentorship? What if you took a seminar and then you want to start a business? What are you kidding? You know, you need time. So you got to practice. Talk with your friends, family, or take more counseling from other therapists. See how they're doing. You know, take it easy. Not so quick. That's why I say, you know, if you have another income source, until you get better, and then slowly you have a client you help, you see you really helped them, you got more confidence, and then, like she said, then start looking at who's got the money to pay and how you're going to get yourself positioned into that, and then you're on the way.
I'd like to ask each one of you, and also including Dr. Sam Chow, because I'm very interested in the first third chapter, first page, Angela showed the first one on the hospice workers, the trail blazers, and so on.
Can I make a link just quickly? So what I just said is I became a protector, right? Because I chose that I needed financial security. I had to go to a market where the money was, so I started doing more corporate work. So I became like a hospice worker I stayed in the current system instead of going into the new system. It's really only the trailblazers that grow into the new system. Some of you have the support or just the angels to get you there. But yeah, that it's about one system or the other.
Yeah, given this perspective in mind, how would you guys assess the Hong Kong society, the situations in our Hong Kong society, and in particular the BMS profession? What is our present situation? Any particular kinds of people that we need, or what is strength and individual development? How would you make any comment, or are blind spots that BMS profession is facing now?
I have one thing I can say about this. I'm sure there's people in Hong Kong in all of those categories, definitely. We might not be that aware of them. Probably the hospice workers is the most common that are more visible. I just want to say how crucial the trailblazers are and how we should be figuring out how we can support those people more. So if we can, even, you know, whether it's moral support, saying yes, animal communication is important, you know, or whatever is the most radical, most crazy thing that's going on, you know, moral support, or maybe financial support also for trailblazers, or publicity support for trailblazers. That's what I would like to see.
Right. So, sorry. I was just going to say, where's the money? Protectors don't know where the money is. When I did numerology first time in Asia to write into this kind of thing, no one supported me. I was written by myself after work, slowly over a year, and then, you know, find a publisher and then get everything going. But Santa, thank you, Santa, and their center was, you know, they found me in Taiwan, and then they started doing seminars. We did a really big seminar. What year was that? Remember?
Oh,
2001. Yeah, I just got back to Taiwan, and there was a lot of people there. Remember?
600
people. Yeah. So they saw the potential, and then they asked me, and then we set it up, and then, of course, after that, I'm not really a protector. I'm sort of like continuously a trailblazer. Yeah. I like new things. I'm a creative type of person. Yeah. So now, but because of that, how many people have made money from numerology in Asia? It's scary. It's not funny. It's a lot of money. I know people that are teaching my seminars for like, was it 10,000 US? It's some crazy. And they're making money. If you go to Malaysia now, there's some multi-level companies doing numerology from my books. And you can buy like a number 9 with a diamond in it for 150,000 US. Stuff like that. It's happening, you know? So yeah, the trailblazers, they need support, but it's got to be from passion, and it's got to be because you love it. Otherwise, like if I didn't do that, I'd be too poor. That's the way I am. But for money, the easy way is, can illuminators make money? I'm wondering.
Oh yeah. They're the ones that are making the next round.
Yes.
They're right out there because they're picking up the idea,
right,
coming up with the products around it, and going. And they don't have the legacy of being a trailblazer because they're going, oh yeah, this is a good idea. The market is ready. Here's what I'm doing.
I think you're looking at an illuminator right now. I would say, Kinsey, your role has been an illuminator all along.
That's so interesting. It's nice. I saw myself as trailblazer. I've never seen myself as illuminator. And it could be that because when I started, there was no trail.
Yes.
And now, maybe that's one of my challenges, is to shift my role into more of a, just my perspective, into more of a, because I have a real judgment around illuminators.
Oh, I do.
For sure.
Can I just say something? Sorry, I think we're living in a different world, and I think we've got to grow with that different world. Where I came from, okay, New Age in the 60s and 70s was hippie. Sorry, use the word. Now it's yuppie. People from professional fields have changed over and brought all their skills over to a different market. Technology's come in, and I think we look at it totally in a different way. I was a beginner. My students have taught me, and they're way ahead of me on the marketing side. Not the experience, but the marketing and how to grow and how to get through there. All the business side, they're really hot on. And I learn from them. But I think you just got to be realistic. We're living in a different world. We've got technology, and we've got to move and change. Yes, you were a beginner, a trailblazer, and now you're going to have to change over. I'm in a different spot, but I just need to sit and bring the groups up that need to be out there.
I just want to point out another insight I just had is that Santa is a protector. So even though I was thinking of the corporate world and, you know, the established, but in this relationship, it was clearly that, right? That this platform and even Awesome Teams Possible could be a protector for certain, in certain ways, to support trailblazers.
May I ask how many of you are still owning your centers or running your centers in parallel with your presentations, lectures, whatever? Or you never run any center or own any center?
I don't have any center. I work from home. I rent a small meeting room by the hour for my client meetings, and most of my meetings I do in my clients' offices.
I don't, sorry, I
haven't had my own center. I've worked in centers, I work at home, and I will book venues when I need them. So I don't have the overall of monthly rent, which in Kong is a very big problem.
Yeah.
I'd like to address both questions together. First, for those loops of systems change, I think we could be playing multiple roles at the same time. So, it's not exclusive. And second, I think I strongly believe in teamwork. So we do not need to own our own center sometimes. We could work with others. And also, like in the example of Dreams Possible, it's a charity. With that charity status, we are actually able to mobilize a lot and a lot of social resources. For example, a huge volunteer team, for example, application to JC and other funding bodies for handsome amount of money. So people who volunteer or work at Dreams Possible are actually at their disposal a huge amount of resources. So that's another strategic approach. We do not need to think only about having our own center or, you know, how to make ends meet on a daily or weekly basis. We can actually collaborate very actively and creatively. And with some status like a charity status, we can actually make use of a lot of social resources. So I like to invite BMS practitioners to think behind or beyond the box. You know, don't think of charity as just charity. especially if we really want to engineer a better future for humanity, I think the charity sector is one big thing to happen. And the charity sector could take the initiative to align with the corporate world, to align with the government sector. There's so much we can do together.
And also, the center, I think, is protectors mostly, isn't it? Like a trailblazer has no need for a center. In fact, it's charity on your own. No, I was paying you to do this.
I know trailblazers who run centers. Sally Anderson, I
call
the trailblazer.
Yes,
she
has
the
WHO. I think some trailblazers are owners of centers, not necessarily. And as I have this conversation, I realize the challenge I'm having with illuminators is illuminators posing, or protectors posing as an illuminator.
Mm.
And I think, this just happened. This is rubbish underneath the seat next to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's plastic, single serving, bottled. And if you're watching the news today,
mm-hmm.
or this week, or this year, finally,
mm-hmm.
this is a big no-no.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about that integrated messaging. So somebody's going to look at this business and go, I'm going to create another single serving disposable product to meet this need for convenience. When I think this whole idea has got to go,
mm-hmm.
and we start using things like this
mm-hmm.
that last a long time. This can be made out of plastic and last a long time. So it's interesting because I hadn't really thought about this until I looked at protectors and illuminators, and I questioned why I had some charge around illuminators. And I think, again, that's where the consciousness comes into it. It's like the other table, spiritual, mind, physical, it's everything is a scale. And on some areas of my life, I might be further here, and some I might be further here. And it's plotting that chart. And when I know where I'm at on the chart, then I can look at the people around me and get a sense of where they are on the chart, so we can then have a meeting place to have a conversation. And I thought back to what you had said earlier about fear and keeping your day job. And I believe there's another reason for keeping your day job, and this is just the number of meditation groups I've been involved in over the years. A lot of people are just completely dying in their day job. and they're desperate to escape from their day job. And my thought is that when I meet someone like this who's interested in meditation and MBS work of any kind, I need you to stay in your day job for as long as possible. Because I really want that awareness brought in to that environment. So it's not just, it's about getting your clients, but it's also about bringing that awareness and that illumination into the day job, and there doesn't need to be one or the other. And maybe one day this protector has become an illuminator without changing the name card.
Something about charities. You can, for instance, I can only use my own my thing. We have a charity section called AACCA, Animal Communicators That Care About Animals. And my student will go out to any, well, I've just handed it over actually, but they will go out and fundraise for any charity that asks them to. So they are putting back in the way that they know how to, and also to spread the word that animals have feelings and emotions and take on the feelings and emotions of the owners. So even if you're doing a business, you can also have something that represents the charity side to the business, and that will grow with your business because it also helps you to advertise yourself if you're looking at it that way. It brings in more clients if you're looking at it that way. But if you care about what you're doing, which is the side I started on, you make people aware of what you're doing, whether it's spiritually, mentally, or emotionally. So having a business doesn't mean you can't do something else to help the community. It doesn't just mean have the business and that's it.
Okay, none of you showing warm up monitoring or the so-called unity or association development of mind-body practitioners in the various in Europe and the US and what is the trend. Because in Hong Kong it has always been in a very settled and we don't have a strong unity or community, except for some professions like coaching, right? Social workers, But I know the things of some Taiwan is a little bit advanced to Hong Kong in terms of maybe organization, this coalition, and the support, and also even standing up for rights, and negotiate with the government for more resources and policy, and think tanks. And I think the U.S. has been quite quite strong in that too. And how about the Europe? I appreciate with us that. And that may help to inspire us to whatever our future development.
Just mentioned by the when I was working in Greece in 98. I worked with the Greek Olympic team in 98, 99, 2000. It's very scattered, like really, really scattered. But thanks to the economic crisis, it's totally different now. We have all kind of new products, new centers, and all. I just came back from Greece. There was a sort of like alternative healing expo, and there was like stuff from all over the world, and they had like different people organizing. It's really happening, yeah. So it's possible, but given my experience as a doctor, because in a way, as a body, mind, spirit healer, you're kind of a doctor, okay? You're kind of a therapist. The problem with therapists, I don't mean to offend anybody, but there's a kind of a competition, a worrying about competition with clients. Like, if I'm really good, and then she comes up, she's better than me, why would I want to deal with my cancer? I got nothing, you know? So there's all kind of an independent protectivism kind of thing. Unless you're working in a hospital, and then you know, it's not your client, it belongs to the hospital. That's different. So there needs to be some kind of cooperation for all the stuff that you said, definitely. But there will always be a limit. I think it's impossible not to have that limit there.
Yeah, I really agree on the whole thing about competition, but I think that's where strong organizations can really help, because they can actually illuminate the way forward. You know, they illuminate the way of collaborating and how that's better in the long run. And it's like a moral force, right? That this is a better way to do things cooperatively. But it just occurs to me, because I feel like I can't really answer your question, because I think only now they're starting, apart from within different professions, there's starting to be more initiatives around gathering body, mind, spirit practitioners together as a whole. But I guess my guess is that we need more crisis, and that this isn't going to happen. If you look at the U.S., I know they have some very strong lobby groups now, for example, for alternative health, and that they are lobbying against the government to you know, make sure the laws are supporting them, and that only happens because there's a threat. So it's most likely that that's what we need.
Marijuana hemp is going to be, it's pretty well open now in Greece, yes, because of that.
I think you've also got to look at the different cultures, because Taiwan's very different from Hong Kong. Hong Kong's very different from China, and Singapore, again, the Asian belt is very, very different, besides Thailand. And the differences are quite vast, because when you start working in each place, especially in the work I do, you find there is a big difference. And if people are more into cultural and spiritual stuff, it's easy to move forward. Where Taiwan is, where Singapore, it's a lot harder because it's very much more Christian based. And again, Hong Kong is a bit mixed. And it's one of those iffy places. And China, well, I'm not sure what they're doing up there. I'm not sure they know. But it's more of a business, so it'll cover all areas. So you can't just say, what can we do here? Because you've got to look at each of the individual Asian places, because they are so different because of the culture. It might be Taiwanese, but if you go to Taiwan, it's a different culture from Hong Kong. And Singapore again, because I work with clients in all those bases, and it's so, so different. And when I was teaching, it was so, so different.
I think one of the big things about Hong Kong is just the financial pressure here. The financial and space pressure. It's so much more. This is not a good kind of pressure. That's not what I'm asking, hoping for. But I guess what it points to is that we need to be better at building our financial foundations. And that would include needing less and having more.
I do not have enough knowledge about the U.S. or the European scenes, but I'd like to just say something about Hong Kong. I think this morning, probably you heard the tragic story, you know, a young lady killed her parents because of some skin problem and therefore emotional problems. I think in Hong Kong, especially in the last few decades, we are seeing a lot of crises, financial crises, and therefore people are constantly under huge pressure. And that could be a very good opportunity for us to learn spiritual practice, to take care of our body and mind and spiritual health and well-being. And indeed, we are seeing an increasing tendency of this. And that's why, you know, the establishment of BMSP, and that's why today's forum. And I'm seeing a lot of encouraging, positive, and increasingly fast development and awareness of BMS health. So I'm very positive. I believe the momentum will gather pace. And we just need to keep doing it. I think Hong Kong desperately needs mindfulness.
And one very important issue, which is why we have like a medical association or a chiropractic association, is because they want to protect themselves. They don't want people bumping, you know. So I think there's an opportunity here for the BMS group, because there's no definition. What is a body, mind, spirit therapist? I can't tell you. There's all, it can be aromatherapy to coaching to making raw food. It could all be, you know. So actually there's an opportunity if there could be a group effort to promote and support and attack the government and get, there's a really big opportunity for Hong Kong. It's new.
Now we have time for one more question, one last question. So, I'll ask. You started by saying that animal communication is not psychic, it is telepathic.
Yes,
yes. Am I right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely.
What's the implication? Well, to the world outside, I suppose, both are equally unscientific.
Oh, absolutely. My husband's been living with 40 something years? Still hasn't got me. And he's a vet. But now he wants to learn animal communication, but we'll go into that. No, psychic is when you're going in, you're predicting the future. Okay? If I'm doing what I call a pathfinding reading for a client, nothing to do with AC, animal communication, the client wants to know where the future's going, what they need to do, and how to get there, which is something that I do. I didn't know I did coaching, but I seem to do it in a different way. Sorry, but I've learned something today, what I'm doing. Okay, but if I'm doing animal communication, I'm just asking that animal, like I would to you, how do you feel today? What are you doing? There's nothing psychic in that, because we're only having a chat. So it's like me going on Skype with an animal telepathically and having a chat. But I'm not predicting the future. I don't know when an animal is going to live or die, because that actually is in God's hands. And the medical profession don't even know either. So this is where I say AC is telepathic, and it's just like going on Skype and WhatsApp and having a chat with an animal. And again, it depends on the personality of you, how talkative you are, or the animal, how talkative they are, as how good I am. Okay? So it's not psychic. And when it's portrayed as that, it gets the wrong message across. They are two different things. Psychic needs to project a path or a future for somebody, or seeing angels, or seeing a spirit, or whatever. Animal communication is telepathic and a chat. I've been branded, because I work with crystals and energy, as the crazy, and I do worship Kuan Yin, the crazy old lady that works with crystals and works with Kuan Yin. It's not that. Crystals are energy. We all have crystals. We all have an iPhone. Crystals have been in the Bible 200 times. So crystals are nothing new. They're part of modern technology. So maybe I do use crystals, but I like crystals. I'm a lady. I like shopping. So let's get it right. So we whatever methods we may use, it is definitely not psychic. It's telepathic. Okay? That's the difference.
Thank you. I'm sure you are. All of us find this afternoon's discussion most fruitful, and we have a lot to bring home. And to thank them, why don't we finish with something lighthearted? Like, can I offer you another melody?
Oh, yeah.
I remember this song called Pretend. interesting. Life is too serious to be serious.
Yes.
Our next session should begin at 4 o'clock. So, make sure you come back.
Yeah.